Okay. Thank you for the invitation. It is, first of all, a great pleasure, but also at the same time, a nice time off in between things that have nothing to do with mathematics. I decided to change my talk at the very last minute, or rather yesterday. I just thought it would be more appropriate to speak about half-arc transitive group actions as opposed to giving the talk that I gave a few months ago in China. So anyway, what is a half-arc transitive group action? Vertex transitive, the group acts transitively on vertices. Edge transitive, it acts transitively on edges. Arc transitive on arcs. And there are actually graphs for which the full automorphism group is transitive on vertices, transitive on edges, but not on arcs. And there are also graphs where the full automorphism group is in fact arc transitive, but there are subgroups which act half arc transitively. Now the story started in 1966. This is a simple observation, really. It comes out of that book, what is it called, Connectivity in Graphs. A theorem there says, well, it's not in this terminology, it's a different terminology, but essentially it says that if you have a group acting in modern terminology half-arc transitively, then the valency of such a graph is even. And there's a simple argument. You take a vertex, it has some edges sticking out. Of course, you have to use the fact that the graph is finite. And then because of the fact that the group acts transitively on edges but not transitively on arcs, every edge gives rise to two arcs, and these two arcs are in different orbits, and you can take an edge and assign an orientation to this edge and then act with the group. But this gives a unique orientation to all the edges, and because of finiteness of vertices and so on and so on, at each edge you have to have the same number of vertices, arrows going out and coming in. Okay, so these graphs, half-arc transitive graphs, and more generally graphs which admit, which have a subgroup acting half-arc transitive, even if the full automorphism group is arc transitive, they have to give even valency. Now valency 2 is no good, you only have cycles. You have half-arc transitive group actions, but the full automorphism group is not of that kind. So the smallest interesting case is valency 4. So that was in 66. Bauer answered, I think, yes, the Tat gave a, there was a question there, an open problem. Is it possible to construct such graphs for every admissible valency? Every even valency, and that the answer was yes, came out in this paper by Bauer. The smallest of valency 4 has 54 vertices, and later on a smaller one was found by, actually independently, but not until much. I mean, when I started working at this problem, I thought that Holt was the one who first discovered this graph, but I realized it was done before in an undergraduate thesis, I think, by Doyle. So there you have it. There are two authors, and this is the graph. You can think of this graph as being composed of three blocks of nine vertices, and each block of nine vertices is a cycle, a nine cycle, and between any two nine cycles you have a matching. It has to be arranged in the right manner so that You have Z9 acting, so these three blocks of size 9 are actually orbits of Z9, and then furthermore, the edges in between have to be arranged nicely so as to allow a cyclic rotation of order 6, actually. First of all, each cycle of order 9 goes into each cycle of length 9, but the cube of this element of order 6 fixes every 9 cycle, and it acts as a reflection on these 9 cycles. And that's precisely what you want in order to have a transitivity on edges, but not transitivity on arcs. And then one just has to show that there are no other automorphisms. So Z9 semi-direct Z6 is the group. It was later proved that this is the smallest half-arc transitive graph. A lot of work has been done on half-arc transitivity, and since my original the original title of my talk had something to do with open problems, I will honor at least that part. So there will be a few open problems related to half-arc transitive group actions. People have done work on various constructions, a lot of different families satisfying such and such properties with, for example, vertex stabilizers of particular kinds, classification problems for such graphs having a particular kind, number of vertices and so on, and there are many other problems. But essentially, the interesting properties, or if you want, the interesting way to look at this graph is via the action of the group being primitive or imprimitive. That's one thing. Then another question is it possible to bring in some sort of geometric argument, especially in view of the fact that you have this natural orientation of the edges because of the half-arc transitive action? And then finally, also, the study of the possible structure of the vertex stabilizers of such graphs, in particular for valency 4, which is the smallest admissible case. But even for valency 4, a lot of interesting things can happen. So here is what I'd like to do today. I'd like to discuss the concept of a reachability relation imposed on the edges and see what we can say if we follow this path. This concept was first introduced in a paper on infinite graphs by Peter Cameron, Cheryl Prager, and Wormald in 1993. But essentially, it can be, translated into finite graphs as well. So we say that one edge is reachable from another if there is an alternating. Suppose you have this orientation on the edge set. You take an edge with the orientation and look at all those edges which can be reached from this edge via an alternating path. An alternating path, by that what I mean is this. So if, suppose this is my edge E, now there will be, at this vertex, there will be some edges going out and some edges coming in. I don't allow this. So if I have gone in this direction, so I have to go out of this, I have to use the opposite direction. So that would be an alternating path. So if this is E prime, then we say that E prime and E are, E prime is reachable from E. And that's an equivalent relation. And essentially, two things can happen. Either this relation is universal or not. And that's an interesting way to, an interesting division line, if you want. Okay? Now, Steve Wilson called the equivalence classes alternates. I'm saying here in the general case, but there is essentially no reason to call them alternating cycles if it wasn't for the fact that I have already used them before, and in case valency is 4, they actually are alternating cycles, because when you have valency 4, you have something like that, and you go like this, and then you can actually show that you always end up in a cycle. So alternate in valency 4 graphs are always cycles. In other words, for valency 4, the relation cannot be universal. That's an interesting distinction between valency 4 and higher valencies. For higher valencies, you can have universal equivalence relation. So you can have just one alternate connected graph. But for valency 4, you don't have universal. You have you have non-universal relation. In fact, in case of valency 4, even the case that is with two alternating cycles, so number of equivalence classes 2, is very simple. The graph has to be of that kind, so it is a circulant graph, a Cayley graph of a cyclic group. And in fact, the graph, of course, is not Hafak transitive. It admits a Hafak transitive action. So for valency 4, if you really want Hafak transitive graphs, the number of alternating cycles has to be at least 3 or more. So that's very special in comparison to what can happen for higher valencies. When the number of alternates, when the number of equivalence classes is more than 1, when the relation is not universal, you have a way to analyze the graphs structurally, because you have, for example, two alternates. You look at two alternates. What is the intersection of two alternates? What are the vertices that are two alternates which have something in common? How many vertices can they have in common? Just one, or they can have more than one? And for example, attachment number was called the number of vertices of two adjacent alternates, and these parameters were also used in the structure when we wanted to get structural results for this graph. So as soon as you have the relation is not universal, you have a way to say something. So when it is universal, there's nothing there, so you have to sort of analyze this directly, just looking at this basic graph for which the relation is universal. Okay, so I have already mentioned valency 4. Now, maybe a brief few minutes here. Roman has done a lot of work with me on this subject, and he will remember hours and hours spent on valency 4 and various constructions and stuff like that. One of the very interesting, and I want to put that as an open problem, one of the very interesting way in which we try to see what goes on was to look at the structure of the vertex stabilizer. For a long time, we only knew of examples of half-arc transitive graphs with valency 4 where the vertex stabilizer was Z2. And that's, I mean, if you look at it locally at a vertex, a stabilizer of this vertex will interchange these two, interchange those two. That would be a logical thing, right? And you could do it with the Z2, you don't need anything else. But you could also happen that you have, say, interchange those two but fix these two. In fact, it took us quite a while before we were able to get one with a Z2 cross Z2, and later on, we now know examples of graphs which are valency 4, half-arc transitive, with arbitrarily large vertex stabilizers. Any elementary abelian group, two group can be represented as a vertex stabilizer of a half-arc transitive graph of valency 4. So that's abelian. We also know of one example where he's vastness. Pardon? He's busy preparing his lecture. Oh, no, you are there, right. This was in 99, I think, at a conference in Bed. I came up with a wrong construction, and then he discovered that the graph was still arc transitive, and then somehow we managed to sort it out. And we now know this is the only example of a half arc transitive graph with a non abelian vertex stabilizer, V8.
What kind of stabilizer?
V8. And it has many vertices, because it has something to do with an alternating group, maybe 5,000 or 10,000 or something like that, in thousands. The theory that we developed with Roman actually gives us all the candidates, gives us a nice characterization of candidates. Direct product of V8 and V2, and there are some other groups, two groups which are more complicated than V8, but we stopped there because we have examples of graphs with I believe V8 cross something V2 to the N, where the action is the action of a subgroup is half arc transitive, but the full automorphism group is still arc transitive. So anyway, we stopped there, but perhaps it would be worth to look at this problem again and see if we can find other examples. Now, back to more general case, universal, non-universal, non-universal. If you have a vertex primitive graph, then the switchability relation has to be universal. Why? Because if you have a non-universal relation, you have these alternates, which are sort of blocks of primitivity, if you want, on edges. But it also gives rise to blocks of imprimitivity on vertices. You can think of this in the following way. An alternate, so it has this vertex here, say V, and it has some edges going out and some edges coming in. Now I will split this vertex into two vertices, V plus and V minus. And V plus will take all the edges going out and V minus all the edges coming in. So this way you will have a double, it was double the vertex set. And the corresponding doubling will also give you blocks of imprimitivity on, but this time on vertices, namely a V plus vertex here, and any other vertex, say U, which is in the same alternate, if you want, with the same plus superscript, will have to be in the same block as this guy here. So all the pluses will be in the same block. Okay? So the interesting, if you have vertex primitive action, then the relation has to be universal. So the interesting cases are imprimitive actions of the group on vertices, but still with the universal relation, with still having universal relation. Now, I have a paper with Kai-Heng Lee and his student Liu in 2004 in Journal of Algebra, where we looked at half-arc transitive actions, vertex primitive half-arc transitive actions. And we have two families with valency 14. Nothing happens for valency smaller than 10, so 10 and 12 is still unresolved. We don't know of any examples there. So I thought I would give you, since we don't have an explicit example of a universal relation for valency 10 and 12 that would come from primitive action, we looked for those where examples where the action is imprimitive. Okay. So and I just want to, and this is in a couple of minutes, I will end my talk by explaining the construction of valency 12. Graph, half arc transitive, where the reachability relation is universal. I will return to this totally impossible to comprehend slide. So here is what you do. You take a graph with, say, n blocks of size 4, its four vertices in each block I will, or in each column I, will turn out to be blocks of impermittivity. And assume that you want this block to be rotated cyclically with a Zn. Now what you do, you between two blocks, neighboring blocks, you want to have two cycles of length 4, and the way they are arranged is precisely what you have over there. See? Now, something like this. And that would be the complement of the lexicographic product corresponding to the union of these two graphs will be a lexicographic product. Now, go to, say, from block 0 to block 1 and so on, you do this. So from I to, this is a mistake. This is supposed to be I plus 1. Okay? So you go from block I to block I plus 1. This is what you do in terms of edges. And you just repeat this cyclically. Okay? So you go from 0 to 1, from 1 to 2, and so on. And then you take an element R of order 3 in Zn star, an element of order 3, and you join block 0 to block R and block 0 to block R squared in a similar fashion, but not exactly. Again, you have to have two blocks of size, two cycles of size 4 between also neighboring block 0 and R and neighboring block 0 and R squared. It all has to be done in the right way so that you allow this cyclic rotation and also cyclic rotation of order n and cyclic rotation of order 3 mapping, say, block 0, 1 to block 0, R, and then block 0, R squared, okay? Assume that is done. And that's what you get in terms of adjacencies. So you have a valency 12 graph. That's a proof notation, but let's just forget about this. I don't think it will be any more illuminating than just hearing my words. The result is this, proved with Claudia and Primoz. Both of them are former PhD students, but now perfectly capable of doing their own research. They were not PhD students anymore. So that's what you do. N is R squared plus R squared plus R plus 1. For example, the smallest case would be R equals 2. Yes, and you have 4 times 7, 28 vertices. However, in that case, the graph is arc transitive because it is too small. So the next case is for which it works is 73. What is 73? 73 is probably 8 squared plus 8 plus 1. So R equals 8. R equals 8. And K equals 3. I equals 1 or 2. Those two, the index I corresponds to the two complementary graphs, the union of which is a lexicographic product. So both of these graphs are vertex imprimitives. The blocks of imprimitivity are these blocks of size 4. They are half arc transitive. And the reachability relation is universal. Well, in this case, R is congruent to 2 modulo 3. So that's the smallest case for which it happens. P equals 73, or n rather, but it is a prime number here. And R is 8. Maybe some other examples where the relation is universal, but also perhaps a theory of that would you would have to bring some additional tools to study graphs alternates if you want to buy alternate graphs where the reachability relation is not universal. That would be a good project, a long-term project, I think. And that's it. Thank you.